Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. So reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, first canto, first chapter, text number 9. Tatra, tatra, anjasa, ayusman, bhavata, yat, vinishchitam, pumsam, ekantata, shreya, tat, na, samsitum, arhasi. Tatra tatranjas ayusman. Tatra tatranjas ayusman. Bhavata yadvinishchitam. Bhavata yadvinishchitam. Pumsam ekantata shreyas. Pumsa ekantata shreyas. Tanna samsitam arhasi. Tanna samsitam arhasi. Tatra tatranjas ayusman. Bhavatadya vinishchitam. Pumsam ekantata shreyas. Tanna samsitam arhasi. Others? Tatranjas ayushman. Vaishnavis. Tatra, thereof. Tatra, thereof. Anjasa, made easy. Ayusman, blessed with a long duration of life. Bhavata, by your good self. Yat, whatever. Vinishchitam, ascertain. Pumsam, for the people in general. Ekantata, absolutely. Shreya, ultimate good. Tat, that. Na, to us. Samsitam, to explain. Arhasin, deserve. Translation and purport by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada. Please, therefore, being blessed with many years. This, by the way, is the sages of Naimisharanya, and they're addressing Suta Goswami. Okay? Please, therefore, being blessed with many years, explain to us in an easily understandable way what you have ascertained to be the absolute and ultimate good for the people in general. Purport. In Bhagavad Gita, worship of the Acharya is recommended. The Acharyas and Goswamis are always absorbed in thought. The Acharyas and Goswamis are always absorbed in thought of the well-being of the general public, especially their spiritual well-being. Spiritual well-being is automatically followed by material well-being. The Acharyas therefore give directions in spiritual well-being for people in general. Foreseeing the incompetencies of the people in this age of Kali, or the Iron Age of Quarrel, the sages requested that Suta Goswami give a summary of all revealed scriptures, because the people of this age are condemned in every respect. The sages therefore inquired of the absolute good, which is the ultimate good for the people. The condemned state of affairs of the people of this age is described as follows. Okay. Om Aginatamananda Shajananjana Shalakaya Chakshuramilitamyena Tasmaya Shri Gudavena Maha Shri Chaitanya Manobishtam Stapitamyena Buddhale Swayam Rupa Gadamayam Dadati Swapadanti Kam. So this is a very important verse, I think, anyway. Let's analyze it. Let's really look at it here. So first of all, what we have is the sages of Naimisharanya are talking to Suta Goswami at Naimisharanya. And they gathered there to perform a sacrifice. I think it's a thousand-year sacrifice, if I remember correctly. Isn't that stated someplace? Thousand-year sacrifice. Okay. So it's called a sacrifice, but basically what they're doing is that they've come together, and, you know, as it mentions here in the purport, the business of these acharyas or goswamis, which basically they all are. They're all in that category. These are all highly elevated spiritual personalities. And they're there. They're always absorbed in the thought of the well-being of the general public, especially the spiritual well-being. And what they're hoping to do is they want to get a summary of all the revealed scriptures for the, so because the people of this age are very condemned in every respect. So they want to, they're trying to, you know, get something that they can, benefit the general populace with, not just for that time, but for generations to come. So, you know, they're not there just for like a, have a good time. They have some business that they're trying to, you know, something they want to accomplish at this sacrifice. So there they are, they're all gathered there, the sages of Naimisharanya, and Suta Goswami is, their spokesman. Okay, they're the person they're asking questions to. Now, the first thing they say to him is that he was blessed with many years. So they're not referring to how old he was there. That's not the thing that they're trying to emphasize. I don't know how old he was, but what they're referring to there, the significance of that phrase, being blessed with many years, is this, that Suta Goswami was the son of Romaharshan Suta. Romaharshan Suta was the original person who is the spokesperson there, that I guess, well, actually, I'm not sure if he was spokesperson at Naimisharanya, but he was the father of Suta Goswami. And he was also presiding. I'm not sure if it was at Naimisharanya or whatever, but he was presiding. He was the spokesperson at some assembly there. And he was given a benediction by the sages present that he would have a long life and full sensual power and so many other things. And he was a disciple of Vyasadeva, Romaharshan Suta. So that was his qualification. Now what happened was, probably you know the story, but Balaram came to a place where he was presiding over the assembly, and all the sages stood up. Everybody stood up and offered respects to Balaram. But Romaharshan Suta, unfortunately, didn't do that. He didn't. He was thinking, well, you know, I'm installed here. I'm on the Vyasasana, and I've been given all these benedictions. And it's, you know, the etiquette is you person who's on the Vyasasana doesn't have to stand up and offer respects to anybody. So I'm okay. But Balaram didn't see it that way. You know, Balaram kind of took that as pretty puffed up and offensive. And at that point, he remembered his past. He was, Rav Maharshan Sutta was from a Pratiloma family. Pratiloma, yeah, offspring. In other words, his father was a Kshatriya and his mother was a Brahmana, and which is not, it's not as good as the other one is Anuloma. Where if the, it should be big, it's ideally both the mother and father should be Brahmanas, both the mother and father should be Kshatriyas like that. But if that's not possible, then at least if the father is a Brahmin and the mother is a Kshatriya, that's not so bad. But if it's the other way around, it's not considered. It's considered like a, almost like a disqualification. It's not, you know, ideal. It's less, considerably less than ideal birth. So he was from that family, but that was overlooked. That was overlooked because he was the son of the disciple of Vyasadeva. So that was overlooked. But then when he behaved like that in the presence of Balaram. Balaram immediately remembered his disqualification by birth, and he mentioned that to the sages of, you know, who were present there at the time. And Balaram decided to, he actually deserves the death punishment. And he took a blade of grass and he touched him on the head, and that was it. He killed him. And now, he's not considered a big demon, by the way, just so, you know, I don't want to vilify Rav Maharshan Sutta very much here. I heard Prabhupada in a lecture say that this was a pastime. You know, Balaram was showing an example of how he's just making a point, and so he's not considered, like, historically speaking, a big demon or anything like that. But the sages were very upset by this event because they had, you know, as mentioned, they had already awarded this Rav Maharshan Sutta certain benedictions. So then they, you know, they said to Balaram, "Well, what do you mean? You just did that." And Balaram, he was apologetic. You know, he was angry at Rav Maharshan Sutta. But then when the sages, they didn't really protest. They just brought it to his attention that, hey, I mean, this is all well, you know, whatever you do is good. But, I mean, we did offer him all these benedictions and everything. And he said, well, okay, what do you want me to do? Should I bring him back to life? I can do that. I can just easily bring him back to life. They said, no, you considered it important to do that. So we don't want to, you know, nullify your activity, but maybe you could do something by which you can, everything can remain as it is, but at the same time, the benedictions we awarded him, you know, remain intact. So Balaram decided, okay, yeah, we're going to install his son, because the son is the representative of the father, and so all the benedictions that were given to initially to Rav Maharshan Sutta were transferred onto Sutta Goswami. So that's being blessed with many years. He's inherited the blessings of his father, Rav Maharshan Sutta. And that's the pastime that explains it. So they go on to say, explain to us, these are the sages of Namasharanya, going on to say, explain to us in an easily understandable way. Now, here, the significance of that is it's not that they're considering, this is not an expression of humility. It's not that they're thinking, well, you know, we're kind of not so bright, so please make it simple for us. I don't think that's the way to understand this. It's what, as I mentioned, their concern is they're concerned about the spiritual well-being of the general public. So they're hoping, they want to get something from Sutta Goswami. They want him to break it down, you know, because they're concerned that, you know, the people of this age of Kali, which is what they know they're entering into, as mentioned here in the purport, the Iron Age of Quarrel, they're foreseeing the incompetencies of the people of this age of Kali. See, so they could foresee the incompetencies of the people of the age of Kali. So therefore, they're asking Sutta Goswami, look, please do us a favor. We want to know, we want to hear from you what you think is the best thing, definitely the best thing people could do with their life, and please just present it in a really simple way. Because these people that we got to, you know, that we're going to be trying to administer this to, or, you know, share this with, and as time goes on and generate future generations, they're going to be very spiritually materially and spiritually incompetent, and therefore we've got to really break it down and make it simple for them. So that's the significance of that. And what they're asking him, of course, is to present what he's ascertained is absolute and ultimate good for all people. In other words, what's the best and most important thing that people could do with their human form of life? So this is a very good question, by the way, in case you know, haven't noticed. This is a really good question. This is what intelligent people should, you know, when they get together to talk about something, this is the kind of thing that this is a subject that should be addressed, you know, especially when you have the opportunity to get the association of some elevated spiritual personality like Suta Goswami. So they asked him a very good question. Suta Goswami appreciated that they asked a very good question. I think in the next chapter he says, Munayo Sarupristoham Bhavad Birloka Mangalam Yat Krita Krishna Samprashna Yenama Supersedity. He congratulates them. He says, thank you. That was a good question. You've asked some good questions. Actually, only questions of this sort are capable of, related to Krishna, are capable of completely satisfying the self. So he congratulates them and he goes on to give them a good answer. Savai Pum Samparo Dhammo Yato Bhaktir Hoksaja Yahoitaki Priyata Yatma Supersedity. That the supreme occupation for all humanity is that by which men can attain to loving devotional service to the Supreme Lord. Such devotional service has to be unmotivated and uninterrupted in order to completely satisfy the self. So Suta Goswami, he appreciated their question. He gave him a good answer. And so they were happy campers, sages of Navasharanya. And I was just thinking as I was reading this that, you know, actually, Prabhupada did that and more. You know, Prabhupada did that and more. First of all, these sages, they came and they approached, you know, because Prabhupada mentions here in the first sentence of his purport, in the Bhagavad Gita, worship of the Acharya is recommended, Acharya Upasanam. It's in chapter 13, text 8 through 13, Acharya Upasanam. So Prabhupada did what Suta Goswami did and more, in the sense that the sages of Namasharanya, they were inquiring, you know, from Suta Goswami, and he gave them an answer. So, you know, he told them, explained to them what life's all about, and how and an easy way to achieve the highest perfection that a human being possibly can. So Prabhupada did that, but he not only explained it to us. First of all, we didn't go to him. He came to us. The sages of, you know, Suta Goswami had it relatively easy in the sense that the sages of Namasharanya were coming to him and inquiring, and he just explained it to them. And then it was kind of up to them to start a Krishna consciousness movement or whatever. And he didn't walk them through it. But Prabhupada did everything. Prabhupada came to us. He sought us out. You know, we didn't go finding Prabhupada. Prabhupada explained everything. He gave us a total vision of reality. You know, he laid it out, right? Broke it down. And then he walked us through it. You know, he didn't just kind of give us the knowledge and then say, okay, look, now these are the basic ideas. Now you guys figure it out how to apply this practically in life. No, far from that. Far from that. Prabhupada explained everything. You know, we're essentially spiritual beings. We're entangled. We're imprisoned in these material bodies. We're actually meant to be, you know, in the spiritual world with Krishna. He gave us all the, you know, the conceptual theoretical knowledge, but then he actually gave directions how to practically, you know, put it into practice as a practical lifestyle, as a culture, as a way of life. I mean, when I came to the Krishna conscious movement, I got more than just a bunch of ideas what to do with my life. I got everything. I walked in the door. I got a place to live. I got clothes to wear. I got food to eat. I got people to, I got activities to perform. I got, and people to do them with. You inherit a whole, Prabhupada gave us a whole life. You know, he gave us more than just the philosophy and the ideas. He just, everything. You got everything all rolled into one. As I said, he just walked us right through it. So it's, you know, just something that I was reflecting upon when I was thinking of this verse. So, so this is a very important verse here. And this is what the kind of thing that people should be, devotees should be concerning themselves about, the spiritual well-being of the general public, which is this is really what's the essential thing. thing here that was, you know, going on at this sages of this Naimisharanya, this sacrifice at Naimisharanya. It's mentioned here also, just sort of like a side point, that material well-being automatically follows spiritual well-being. And and that's why you see that the acharyas they're focusing on spiritual well-being, because they know that one follows the other. It's not necessary to make a lot of elaborate arrangements for the material well-being, because if people just are serious about following the directions for spiritual well-being, then the material well-being more or less follows. And we experience that in our Krishna conscious movement. Prabhupada has given us directions, activities for spiritual well-being, such as rising early, vegetarian diet, activities, you know. And if somebody follows the basic program of Krishna consciousness conscientiously, you know, in a serious way, then yeah, you do find that material well-being more or less automatically follows. Health, good health, and clear brain, you know, that you can, so you can work out how to maintain yourself and like that. So not a lot of emphasis has to be given on that, because it, as mentioned here, material well-being will automatically follow the spiritual well-being. So one important point is that so Prabhupada has given us everything, and so we should be very careful to take, very conscientious about how we follow his instructions and not cut corners. Everybody heard that, familiar with that expression, cutting corners? Cutting corners means that the cheapest, easiest way to do something. It might be okay, a good idea in the material world to cut corners. If you have some business or something like that, you're trying to sell a product, if you can cut corners in how you produce it, you know, you save money in the production costs, and then you're able to make more profit. But the same thing, if we do that in our spiritual lives by cutting corners, doing it the easiest and the cheapest way, if cutting corners means cutting bhakti, that's not a good idea. Because by cutting bhakti, we might be cutting our own throat. So we have to be very careful in Krishna consciousness. It's not to try to avoid the tendency, because it's definitely a tendency. I'll put myself at the top of the list there of, you know, people who have the tendency to cut corners. There's a tendency among everybody to cut corners, you know, to kind of skip out on that part of the kirtan, or maybe not so, you know, carefully follow the reading, the discipline reading schedule, or whatever. You know, everybody's got their corners that they cut. But it's good to remind ourselves, try to not cut the corners. Prabhupada gave us a program, and, you know, just he knew what he was doing. And every part of this program is essential, and therefore we should try to very conscientiously follow every part of the program that Prabhupada has given us. And we see over the years, those of us who've been around for years, that the devotees who've been the most successful are the devotees who, you know, have conscientiously followed that. They're the devotees who seem to have been able to, over the years, emerge as the most highly successful devotees. People have very strictly followed the basic programs that Prabhupada's given us and not cut corners like that. Here's one nice reference. It's an excerpt from a letter, from a lecture Prabhupada gave here in, I believe it was here in Los Angeles in 1973. He said, if you actually associate with sadhu, then the next stage is bhajana kriya, initiation, how to worship Krishna. Then anartha nivritti syat. If you're actually engaged in devotional service, anarthas, which are things which are not required, they will vanish. Just like we ask our students, no illicit sex, no intoxication, no gambling, no meat eating. Simply by hearing it, you cannot follow it. It is not possible. If you make bhajana kriya, if you're actually following, chanting 16 rounds, then you can follow the others. Because then you'll be able to actually follow these regulative principles. Otherwise, if you are spiritually weak, you cannot. See, so in other words, on this point of not cutting corners, Prabhupada's making the point here that by following these regulative principles, you know, the things he's given us, chanting 16 rounds and attending Mangalarti and attending the Bhagavatam class and chanting in the association of the devotees, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. That's where you get the strength. You know, that's where you get your... without doing that, you're not going to have the strength required to follow the four regulative principles. No illicit sex, no intoxication, no meat eating, no gambling, like that. Prabhupada says that. He says, if you don't do that, then otherwise, you know, if you're spiritually weak, you won't be able to do it. You won't be able to follow those rules and regulations. So, once again, very important not to cut corners. And then beyond that, you know, it's of course, we can, you know, we should be thinking that, wow, we're so fortunate that we've been given this opportunity. And, you know, what can we do? Well, like, Prabhupada's done so much for us. What can we do for Prabhupada? Well, that question was posed to Prabhupada once here in Los Angeles. Devotees wrote a Vyas Puja offering. And in that Vyas Puja offering, they expressed that. They expressed that, Prabhupada, you know, what can we do to repay you? Or we don't know what we can do. We don't think we can repay you. I think that's how they put it. We don't feel like we can repay you. And Prabhupada didn't respond to Vyas Puja homages. But this particular one he did. And he wrote back something. I think it was Ramaswar during that period of time. And he wrote back saying, yes, actually it's correct. That what you've said is correct. That it's not possible to repay the debt, one's debt to the spiritual master. But if you'd all want to repay me, then please preach very vigorously as I am preaching. So that was Prabhupada's response to that sort of inquiry. How can we repay you? Or we don't think we can repay our debt to you. And Prabhupada acknowledged, yeah, you can't. But if you do, if you'd all want to try to repay that debt, then please preach very vigorously as I'm preaching. So, of course, that, you know, that preaching takes the form of book distribution, Hari Nam, Prasadam distribution. And, you know, pretty much all of us were capable of doing something along those lines. I mean, if you can't do one thing, you could do the other. There's other forms of preaching as well. But, we should all be thinking like that. You know, we should all be constantly, you know, reminding ourselves how fortunate we are and how much we owe to Prabhupada for everything he's given us. As I said, he's given us more than just a bunch of ideas. He gave us everything. He gave us the whole... you know, the whole kit and caboodle, so to speak, the whole lifestyle, the whole culture. And we just come forward and we got everything. So we should be thinking like that. And once again, our responsibility is to strictly and very seriously and sincerely try to follow the instructions. And then beyond that, try to preach the Krishna consciousness movement, like Prabhupada was saying there, and as a way of reciprocating and showing our appreciation for everything that Prabhupada has given us, done for us, like that. So I'll stop there. Does anybody have any questions or comments?
Hare Krishna. Thank you for the class, Prabhu. I was just wondering, what would be the source of our propensity to cut corners? And if there's something that we can be attentive in one part of our practice in order to avoid cutting corners in other parts of our practice, if there's like a place where it begins. Does that make sense?
Not entirely, but I'll attempt an answer. Hearing is the basic principle of understanding. So... that's why it's important. You know, we have these classes every day, every morning. Used to be classes morning and evening, and Suhas reads from the Bhagavatam in the morning after Mangalarti. So by hearing the instructions of Prabhupada, we'll be reminded of what the proper standard is. If you stop hearing, then you'll forget what the proper standard is. We're fortunate here in New Dwarka. We get a lot of hearing. We have Rabindranath read his Krishna book during breakfast prasadam, Suhas reads from the Bhagavatam. We have the class, so a lot of opportunities to hear. And by hearing, you're hearing, you know, the philosophy, and you're hearing Prabhupada's instructions are kind of like embedded within his presentation of the philosophy, and then the rest is up to us. And we're being reminded enough, and then that's you know, we just have to put it into practice. That's the way to avoid cutting corners, just one way anyway. And another thing is stay in good association. You know, when you're in among the other devotees who are doing it, there's a tendency to feel like you should do it. I remember once I went to Vrindavan, and I think it was 1989, 1990 was Kartik, and I thought I was on a bit of a vacation. So I went to Mangalarti, Krishna Balaram Temple, and then it was time for Tulsi Puja, and I thought, yeah, this is like a bit of a vacation for me, so I'm going to pay my obeisances and I'm going to leave, you know? So I paid my obeisances and I got up and I looked around and I said, whoa, wait a second, I'm just about to leave, but here's Tamal Krishna Maharaj, he's staying. Here's Satsarup Maharaj, he's staying. Here's Rompa Swami, he's staying. You know, I looked around, there's like another four or five sannyasis, they're all staying for Tulsi. And I thought, well, who the hell do I think I am? You know, I'm paying my obeisances, getting ready to leave, and all these devotees who are senior to me and, you know, years in the movement, age and advancement, they're all staying. They think it's important enough to stay. So I just decided, well, looks like I'm staying. And I stayed. You see, so that was I got the benefit of good association. So that's what it's like. You see, when you hang out with devotees who are serious, you know, you feel like, well, I guess I got to get more serious. So that's important too. Hearing and good association. Archie de Babu, yeah.
Thank you for a really nice presentation, Brigapati Prabhu. I think this devotee, I don't know his name. What is
it? Davis, Bhakti Davis.
Okay, Bhakti Davis's question was, what is the source of that tendency to cut corners? So the sources are very conditioning. That is the nature of being a conditioned soul. Tendency to cheat. And like you said, in your class, ultimately if you keep cheating, you cheat yourself, you cut your own throat. But the tendency, that desire to cut corners, comes from that one of those defects of the conditioned soul, which is to cheat. We want things cheaply. We don't want to put in all the effort, but we want the result, or more than we deserve. So that's where it comes from. And then if you keep doing that, as Brigapati said, if you keep cheating, cutting corners, then you're going to cut your own throat.
Yeah, anybody else? Okay, thank you very much. Grandchild Srimad Bhagavatam Ki Jai, Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai.
I just have one question. I just didn't want to pull people from practice, but